Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you with us today as we talk straw bale gardening with our guest, Joel Karsten. He is the author of The Straw Bale Gardening Method. He's written a number of best-selling books on the topic. And as we talk with him, he's a very enthusiastic guy, by the way. He'll convince you. You may have some questions for him, though. What are they? Have straw bales changed the way you grow your vegetables? Want to know how to do it? Well, you've come to the right place. Join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Joel Karsten, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Hey, it's great to be with you, Larry. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, I wonder how you feel, or how does it feel, to have your method being used in 60 countries?
Yeah, it's amazing how the interest has grown over the years. I always tell people I've been doing this 30 years. The first 15 years, nobody cared. The last 15 years, people can't get enough. So that's how it always goes.
Why, you know, thinking about some of these other areas, why is it important to people who live in some countries in Asia, for example, to have this?
Well, you know, it depends on where they live and what their circumstances are. But if you think about straw bale gardening, you don't have to own any land, which is really key. You don't have to have any tools. You can do it without any tools at all. It's almost free, especially if you make your own bales. You can do this for almost no upfront cost at all. It eliminates a lot of variables from gardening that typically keep people from trying to grow their own food or attempting to grow their own food. So, you know, kind of depends on the person's circumstances and where they live. Could be they have bad soil. It could be they, you know, for whatever reason, flooding is an issue we dealt with in Cambodia a lot. And in the Philippines, it's urban gardening. So they live in a city. They don't have any place to garden. They don't own any land. They don't have community gardens there like we think of here. So it's very different.
Yeah. And I guess the product, we always talk about straw bale gardening, but I know in some of those other countries, other kinds of materials are used other than straw.
Yeah, any tightly compressed organic material. You remember, all organic material turns into soil. You know, given enough time, even a redwood tree becomes soil once again. So keep that in mind, that everything will decompose back into soil. So what we're looking for is something that kind of has a fine texture. Sugarcane stalk works very well. And you can imagine the leftover sugar in there really feeds bacteria, and that tends to decompose very quickly. So, and that's what we're looking for, is to build up bacteria inside the bale, and then that bacteria metabolizes the straw, sort of digests the straw and turns the straw into soil. So the big misnomer about straw bale gardening is that we're planting in straw or we're planting in a hay bale. We're really not. We're planting into brand new soil inside the bale. So we're going to spend a couple of weeks prepping the bale, which is really growing bacteria or composting the inside of the bale. And then we plant our vegetables right into that newly formed soil inside the bale. So oftentimes people will say, well, how do your stuff taste when it grows in straw? It's not growing in soil. I have to explain to them, it is growing in soil. It's just very early stage virgin soil inside the bale.
Barbie in Washburn has a question that kind of, it relates to what we're talking about now. So let's go there. Hi, Barbie.
Hi.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I would like to know, what is the advantage of growing plants in straw?
Oh, my goodness. There's so many advantages, Barbie. Let me start with the number one reason that people love it is there's no weeding. You'll go the whole season and you won't have to pull weeds in your vegetable garden. It's raised up off the ground, so it allows people easier access, especially, you know, we're all going to get older someday. As my grandma Josephine used to say, getting down on the ground is the easy part. Getting back up, that's where I struggle. And with straw bale gardening, you don't have to worry about that. If you can bend over and touch your knees, you can plant a straw bale garden. So there's two big ones. Another really big one, especially for people in Wisconsin, where I'm at here in Minnesota, the bales get warm as they begin that decomposition early in the spring. So now imagine planting your tomato in the middle of May into a bale that's 80 or 90 degrees instead of into the soil that's still 50 degrees. So that tomato thinks it's already the end of June or the middle of July. It starts growing like crazy. So you get really fast, really rapid early season root production, especially on warm season crops. That's a really big advantage. Another great one, it has an amazing moisture holding capacity. A dry bale of straw will suck up and absorb inside and hold inside 4 to 6 gallons of water inside the bale. Ever tried picking up a wet bale of straw, Larry?
It's yes. Really heavy. It is.
But yet, even though it holds that much moisture, one of the magical things about straw bales is if you've got 6 inches of rain overnight, all your neighbor's gardens and the soil might be flooded. Your garden's going to be just fine because it won't hold more water than it will hold. You know, once it's completely saturated, extra water just runs out the bottom, and then air gets back in, and it allows air to get to the roots of your plants, and therefore you don't have plants that drown from having too much moisture. Another big advantage, you don't have soil-borne fungi, or, you know, you get verticillium wilt, or you get septoria leaf spot in your tomatoes, and then those tiny leaves with the infection, with the spores, they fall on the ground and they get tilled into the soil. That's going to live in your soil for many, many years after that. So if you plant tomatoes back in that same soil, the first rain you get is going to splash some of that, those spores back up on your tomato and the disease comes back. So if you're gardening up off the ground in a straw bale and you haven't introduced any soil, you know, traditional soil, you're not going to have any lingering disease, soil-borne disease, or soil-borne insects as well. Now, I'm not telling you you're not going to get any bugs in your garden, because that's not true at all. You still will get flying insects and other insect issues, but at least we stay ahead of the ones that are soil-borne and that will harbor overwinter in your soil. Another great thing about straw bale gardening, you don't have to rotate crops. You know, with a traditional garden, you can't plant your stuff in the same spot every year, or your soil is going to get depleted of micronutrients that particular crop likes, and it's just going to kind of wear the soil out. You're going to get an accumulation of disease or insects that affect that plant, and pretty soon you don't get a crop at all. So you know you got to move plants around in your garden. Where straw bale gardening, especially if you have a small lot and you only have sun on one area, you can plant the same crop in the same place every year. You're just replacing the bales every 2 years. I use a 2-year rotation for all my bales. So I plant warm season crops in the first year bale because they get nice and warm inside. The second year, that bale's not going to get hot again. It only gets hot once. And sometimes you got to reconnoiter and make 2 bales into one, kind of squish them together a little bit. But that makes a beautiful spot for planting root crops or cool season crops that you want to plant real early in the season, because you don't have to go through that conditioning process again. You can just plant as soon as it's nice out. Even if it's not quite past your last frost, you can get potatoes and other things planted in that second year bale. So 2-year rotation. Then after that, the third year, you can use what's left, the compost in your containers, in your planters. You can put it around perennials as mulch or work it into your other garden areas, and it really improves the soil a lot. So you'll get a lot of use out of that bale of straw.
Yeah, for sure. Barbie, does that help?
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@WPR.org. ideas@WPR.org. Chuck in Madison called. He wanted to tell you about his straw bale gardening method. He says it's great. He started using 240 to 250 gallon tubs for his straw bale garden. He cuts the top and the bottom off. Then you have a containment for your straw bale garden, or you can just punch some holes in the bottom so excess water runs through. It stands about waist high. He uses some chemical tubs, old ones of some sort. Anyway, it stands about waist high, so he thinks it's a little more helpful perhaps for elderly people.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. You know, I wonder if he's the same guy. We got a guy on one of our Facebook pages that has posted pictures. He could be the same guy. I'm not sure. But yeah, that's a great idea. You know, not everybody has access to a container like that. But if you do, I mean, that certainly would work wonderful.
Yeah.
People ask me all the time, Larry, can I use big round bales or big square bales? You know, because a lot of farmers now don't make small squares anymore. And, you know, the big problem with those is moving them around. You know,
yeah.
Big round bale's going to weigh, you know, 700-800 pounds. How are you going to move it? But if you lived in a farm and you had access to those, you certainly could use them. What I always tell people you want to do, however, is cut them in half. You want to cut them in half. Use your neighbor's chainsaw because it's going to gum this chainsaw all up when you do this. But you want to cut it like a round bale, so you roll it ahead real slow, but you cut right down the middle. And then it'll fall side to side. You'll have two big round beds that you can plant in. And those will actually last about 3-4 seasons. You can garden in those. And the big squares, too, you got to tip that up on edge, and you want to cut right down between the strings. So don't cut the strings or the wrap that goes around it. You want to cut between it. So you have two layers, each one's 2 feet high, instead of having a 4-foot high bale. And those beds, you can treat those beds like you would a normal straw bale. You got to use more nitrogen, of course, because you got a lot more carbon there. But those will work well also. So, you know, if you have access and you live in a rural area and you have a tractor or something, you can move these around. That certainly will work to use big rounds or big squares as well.
Greg in Sheboygan has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Greg.
Hey, Greg. I was just wondering, in the second-year bales, have you ever tried to grow mushrooms? Like, there's a book by Paul Stamets, and it has all the directions for how to grow the mushrooms, and you can buy the spawn directly from many different places, and it's got the addresses and the and post office boxes of all the different places you can grow mushrooms, get the mushroom spawn from. And
yeah,
you should try that in the second year.
Yeah.
Throw in some stuff like Kingstroke Perrier, you get these 4-pound mushrooms.
Yeah. You know, Greg, you're speaking my language, because in the last book I wrote, I did a whole chapter about growing mushrooms in bales of straw. And then when we're all done with the mushrooms, then we can still plant vegetables in it. but I tell people exactly how to do it. You know, the big thing with a big bale of straw is you have to figure out a way to pasteurize that bale. And that is to kill all of the pre-existing potential fungi spores that might be in there, or other spores of other, errant mushrooms before you put the spawn on. And so what I tell people is, you've got a big turkey cooker, one of those big pots, get some water boiling, about 6-8 gallons of water in there, get that boiling good, and then put your whole bale into a big giant cooler. Now, I have one of these big, huge coolers for when we go camping. I can fit a whole bale inside that cooler at one time. If you can't do that, I'll tell you a good way to do it is make a square box around a bale using other bales, and then take your bale out of the middle, line that with plastic so that you can throw a bale into that pool of water when you dump it in there. And then when you get that water boiling, open the cooler, pour the water over the top, shut the cooler. And that'll keep it about 165 degrees for an hour. And that'll pasteurize it. You won't get any errant spawn that comes on there. And then put that on a nice clean sheet of plastic. You want to rub your spawn on it, make some little holes all over with a stick. Put your spawn on, and then wrap it up like a big burrito. And you put it in a shady spot in your yard and keep it moist. You know, you want to look underneath there, make sure you keep it nice and moist. And in 2 weeks, you'll see these little tiny baby mushroom heads start to form. And then you can pull the plastic off, and those mushrooms will just grow like crazy. Now, what I've grown mostly are, let's see, which ones did I grow? I grew Chinese. They're all, what is it, wine caps? Is a common one, and then oyster mushrooms, Chinese oysters, Phoenix oysters, and another oyster mushroom. But the oyster mushrooms tend to really like it, this method. But yeah, it's very common, and you'll get, you know, a couple, 2-3 5-gallon pails off of each bale in terms of mushrooms. So it's a great way to do it. If you like mushrooms, it's a great way to produce a lot of mushrooms.
Greg, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it very much. Joel Karsten, our guest today, the founder of Straw Bale Gardening and author of a number of books on the topic, our guest today on Garden Talk. Jill Nadeau is our producer, by the way. Courtney Everett, our on-air producer. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Talking straw bale gardening today with our guest, Joel Karsten. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for visiting with us today. I really appreciate it. We have callers online. There's one line open for you at 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Helene in Waukesha, we'll give you a chance. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I would like to know when you're planting in the either the straw or hay or other type of material. Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Well, I'm wondering when you're planting, should you set the bales on edge so that, you know, the cut part is up or on their side, typically where the...
Where the strings are, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, you want the cut side up, right, Joel?
Yep, yeah, you want the cut side of the bale up. And some parts of the country, probably not around you guys, but in some parts of the country out west, they'll bale them weird. They put three strings on the bales because the bales are a lot bigger, and then they'll put strings on the cut side. And then how do you solve that problem? Right? So I get a lot of calls. And I always tell people, try to keep the strings on the sides of the bales no matter what. Only because when you go to plant, you're going to have a sharp trowel, and you're going to be making a hole in the top of that bale, and it's easy to cut a string. And if you cut a string and the strings are going underneath the bale, it's really hard to get a new string on that bale. And when you lose compression on the bale, that squeezing action of the strings, that's really helping with the decomposition. So we need to keep that bale squeezed. You know, we need to keep that string taut. So I like to run the strings around the bale. If you happen to cut one or, you know, run the wheelbarrow into it and you cut a string or something, you can always easily put a new one around the bale. It's just hard to get a new string underneath the bale. And you'll avoid cutting it when you go to plant, too. I mean, we are going to plant the sides of the bales as well as the top, but the sides is usually a transplant. You're just going to make a hole with your shovel handle, and then you're going to stick the root ball down into the middle of that bale when you plant the sides of the bale. On the top, you know, you're kind of making a big hole. Usually I put my tomatoes and stuff in the top of the bale. So you're making a deep hole in the bale. I'm kind of squishing around a little bit. And a lot of times a sharp trowel, you can easily cut a string. So,
yep, very good. Helene, thank you. Carol in Janesville, your turn now. Hi, Carol.
Yes, good morning. I have a question about the type of straw. I'm older and I can't lift a lot of things, but I see like places like Ace Hardware sell small bales of straw. Is that acceptable for planting?
Well, if you're talking about the decorative bales, I mean, those really tiny ones, they're like, you know, 10, 15 inches or 20 inches or whatever. Those, you probably, I mean, it would take a lot of those to make a, I mean, you could try it just as an experiment. You certainly could experiment with it. But in terms of a big, you know, garden where you're going to grow a bunch of stuff, it would take a lot of those little bales to make that work. And, you know, without the depth there, you don't have a lot of depth, so it'd be hard to get water to hold. But I have seen a lot of garden centers that'll sell half bales. And, you know, if a normal bale is 30 pounds, you're down to 12, 15 pounds for a half bale, and that certainly would work fine. Your better bet is to talk to the guy at the hardware store and get him to deliver them right to you, and then and give the kid 10 bucks and have him bring them right to the backyard and set them right in place for you. You'd be surprised what $10 will get you. Or maybe with inflation, you might have to give 20 bucks. But a teenage kid, 20 bucks, it goes a long way. He'll carry a couple of bales right to the backyard, put them right where you want them.
There you go, Carol. Thank you so much. Tanya in Randolph. Hi.
Hi there. This is fantastic. So I'm redoing my garden this year, and I hadn't considered straw bales until right now. The tomatoes I like are indeterminate, and usually you have to space them quite a ways away, especially because of early blight. But if I'm putting them in a straw bale, I don't have to worry about that so much. Can I get two indeterminate tomatoes in one large bale? Not the big round one, but, you know, a standard bale size.
Yeah. You know, you could plant them in there, but the problem is the top of the plant is going to get so big that they're going to kind of, one's going to climb over top of the other one, and you're going to end up with the same number of tomatoes as if you just had one plant anyway. So I would recommend just doing one. Now, you can plant some other stuff in that same bale. You know, you could do some basil and some carrots or something in that same bale that you would harvest earlier, and then, you know, the tomato's going to get really big in, you know, late July. You're going to really start getting a lot of foliage production up there. But that's a massive – I mean, they'll get 8 feet tall up above my bales, and they'll get, you know, 6 feet wide, you know, 3-4 feet in both directions. And we just make a trellis above our bales, and then we kind of weave the vine in and out of that trellis. The trellis is simple, just a couple of fence posts on the end of the row of bales, and then you put some fencing wire back and forth between the posts, the steel fence posts, every 8 inches or so. And then you just weave the tomato vine in and out of that, up the trellis, and you'd be amazed at how much weight that'll hold. You know, you have a couple of hundred tomatoes up there on that plant, and it'll support it just easy as can be.
And, you know, we should mention your website that, you know, you have a lot of information online that people can actually see. Go ahead and talk about that.
Yeah, there's like 100 videos on there now, Larry, we have. StrawBaleGardenClub.com. That's our main site now. And it says club, but that doesn't mean, you know, that we hold anybody back. The only thing, we started the club because we want people to register so that we don't get spammers. Otherwise, we have a forum where people can leave questions and get answers and stuff. Otherwise, we would get people trying to sell sunglasses and stuff on our website. So we make you register, but you can get a membership. The Sprout level membership is free. So anybody can come and sign up. You can watch all the videos. You can use the forum to ask questions and whatnot, all for free. So it's strawbalegardenclub.com. But yeah, there's 100, and we do, my business partner is a professional producer, video producer. So the videos are really well done with quality video, quality sound, and it's good information. It's basically covering every aspect of straw bale gardening that you can imagine.
Good points. Strawbalegardenclub.com. Is the place. There you go. Thank you. You can join in too, by the way. Lines open for you at 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Greg from Thorpe called and wanted to ask about the starting process of a straw bale garden. You had mentioned sugar cane when you were talking about, but he's wondering, could you use regular sugar?
I would, if you're going to do, I have done what I call my express conditioning process. Normally we just use a source of nitrogen. That's really all you need is nitrogen and the bacteria love that. The bale has to get the right carbon to nitrogen ratio before the bacteria will really thrive and metabolize. You can grow bacteria in there without having all the nitrogen present, but it still won't thrive like it will by getting that carbon nitrogen balance. But yeah, if you're going to use sugar, I would suggest molasses. I did some bales last year at the Minnesota State Fair, and they didn't give me the space until really late, so I had to do express conditioning. So I did the nitrogen, the normal process, and then I also used molasses, watered it down a little bit and used that on the bales. And, man, they sure decomposed in a hurry to get that bed ready so that I could get it planted by the 1st of June. So by the end of August, we'd have squash vines crawling up over top of our trellis. So.
Well, maybe we should go back and go over the whole process of just conditioning the bales. Molasses would be a lot more expensive than a little bit of nitrogen fertilizer.
Yeah, you don't need much fertilizer at all. You know, if you're using like lawn fertilizer or something that's high nitrogen, it ends up taking only about 2.5 cups. You know, you don't just want to all pour it all in at once. So you want to kind of distribute it out over 10 days. We have a great video series or email series. We'll send you an email every day and show you in by video exactly how to do it. You can sign up for that, of course, at our website. But in any of my books, of course, it gives you the details about how to do it. But essentially, that's what it is. It's about 2.5 cups, 2.25 cups per bale over 10 days. And then you want to water. The number one mistake that straw bale gardeners make, and I'm sure you never made this mistake when you started there, is overwatering. It's very common. People will water too much. And that's easy to do, and it's understandable, because normally in your garden, you water until you see some puddles in your garden, right? Well, you're never going to get puddles in a straw bale garden. So people will water, and they'll call me, and they'll say, you know, I've been watering my garden for 2 hours every day, and the plants are just wilting. They don't look good. So then I water longer the next day. And then I try to explain to them that after a gallon of water is on that bale is pretty much fully saturated with that extra gallon of water that you put on. And then if you let it run for another hour on top of that bale, it's going to leach out all of your soluble nutrients. So your nitrogen is very soluble, calcium is soluble. So a lot of this stuff is going to leach out of the bale, and you're going to literally like wash the roots of that tomato plant or whatever's in that bale. And the plant's going to wilt because of that. And then you're going to think, oh, I didn't water long enough, so tomorrow I'll water longer. And it just becomes a problem that exacerbates over time. So what I tell people is shoot for 1 gallon of water every day during conditioning. You know, don't sit there and try to wash all the fertilizer down into the bale. That's not necessary. Just 1 gallon of water. We're just trying to keep the bale moist so that that bacteria can move around inside the bale. The bacteria will come up and get the nitrogen fertilizer. You don't need to worry about washing it in. They're very mobile, and they'll move around in that bale. And then once you plant, you want to water. When you do water, only give the bale 1 gallon of water per application. Then you can adjust how often you water, but never change the dose. Every time you water, water so you target 1 gallon per bale per application. And if you're using a soaker hose or a drip style hose, you know, you can put a little cup underneath a couple of the emitters on the top of the bale and kind of get a good idea of how much water's coming out of there. You just don't want to water so much that you get all this water coming out the bottom, because it's carrying your nitrogen out with it, I assure you. When you see water coming out the bottom, you're leaching your nutrients out of the bale. So be cautious about that. So little nitrogen, little water. And as soon as you get some days where it's a little bit warm, you know, you get 170-degree day, and that bacteria will colonize that bale very quickly. And that's what we're looking for, is that bale to become colonized. Now, how do you know when that's happening? Well, if you got a microscope, you could check it out. You could see. But most of us don't have a microscope at home. So how do you tell? Well, the bale will get warm during this period. So if you stick your hand in there, if you got a compost thermometer or even a – steal your wife's meat thermometer and shove it in the side of the bale, and you'll see it's, as long as it's registering above air temperature, you know that bacteria are growing inside that bale. And it can get as hot as 135, 140 degrees inside that bale. It's very common, which is a good thing. You know, we want that heat because it's going to colonize very rapidly when that's happening inside the bales.
Yeah, and you do that over 10 days, and then you're ready to go ahead with planting.
Yeah, by the 12th day, you know, if you're doing it with organic nitrogen, like blood meal or an organic source, then you got to wait till about 18 days. It just takes a little longer. It acts a little slower. But with normal, like lawn fertilizer, we actually make a product now, Larry, called Bale Buster, which is I designed just specifically for straw bale gardening that people can use as well. So, and after 12 days, your bales are ready to plant at that point. So you can do transplants. You know, you can make a hole and stick the root ball down in there. Or you can make a seed bed if you're doing real tiny seeds, like carrots. You know, anything that's a real tiny seed, you need a seed bed on top. And I don't want you to take your shovel and just put some soil on top, because now you're just bringing problems with you on top of your bales. I want you to get one bag of clean potting mix and spread just a thin layer on top of the bales, and then water that in, and then put another thin layer on top, and then seed into that. So these tiny little carrot seeds and other things, you can come back and thin them later, lettuce and carrots and whatnot. You thin them out later, but sprinkle them on, kind of broadcast spread them across the surface of the bale. We don't plant in rows like we do in a normal garden. We kind of broadcast, or we checkerboard plant the top of the bales. Peas, beans, big seeds like that, you don't need the potting mix. Those you can stick right down into the bale, and they'll sprout right out of the bale. But tiny seeds, you need that little layer of seed bed to hold them in position and hold some moisture around them until they germinate. Then the root will shoot right down into the bale.
Mm. Rick in Belleville will give you a chance now. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Rick. Thanks, Larry. Hey, Joel. A couple of questions. Could you hone in a little bit on how you define straw? For example, my traditional thought of straw is wheat that's been harvested, where the grain's been harvested, and the stems are then cut and baled up. And that's traditionally what some farmers think of as straw. But we do small square bales of grass for horses, and many times we'll get in a wet season when we can't get all the hay dry, we get some bales that have enough moisture that they tend to mold. So those usually get thrown away. That's my first question. How do you define straw? Can it have alfalfa in it? Can it be grass hay? And then the other couple other questions. The twine that we use to bale is usually a sisal twine, which is an organic twine, and it tends to rot and break over time. Sometimes you can use nylon, but that's probably not as advisable for you. But those are my basic questions about the consistency of the bales, if you could address that.
Sure, absolutely. First of all, I need to get your phone number, Rick, because I'm going to come and get those decomposing bales that you have that got mold on them. Those are perfect for a straw bale garden. We used to not tell farmers. We'd go ask a horse farmer if he had any moldy bales he was going to throw away, and they'd wonder what you're going to do with it. Now they know they have value, so now they'll sell them to you instead of giving them to you. So, yeah, absolutely, that hay will work with any combination of grass or anything in it. You know, there's some advantages to using hay bales versus straw bales, but there's also some disadvantages. The advantage is that hay tends to have more protein, which converts to nitrogen, which means there's more nitrogen present there for your plants to grow. It also means that bale is going to decompose faster. So it's really hard to keep a bale sort of in the shape and size of a bale through the whole season and the next season. So sometimes you don't get a second season. You got to really reconnoiter those, wrap chicken wire around, and maybe pile three bales on top of one another if you want to use them a second year. It really becomes compost very quickly. Where the straw bales have more carbon, you know, wheat straw, oat straw, barley straw, rice straw, all of those cereal grains make great gardens because with the high carbon content, they just decompose a little more slowly. So usually you get two seasons out of those as a bale. With maybe a little bit of what I call reconnoitering for the second year, you know, wrapping with some chicken wire or something to kind of keep the shape of the bale. But you can literally use anything. I mean, anything that will decompose. I had a guy one time that they were harvesting the milfoil out of a lake and piling it up on the shoreline, and he backed his baler up there and made bales out of that milfoil. You talk about a garden, Larry.
Wow.
Oh, wow. 'Cause that has all kinds of nitrogen and everything in it. You know, it sprouts a bunch of stuff, but that bale gets so hot as it begins to decompose that any viable seeds that were inside that bale, those are just quickly metabolized along with the straw by the bacteria because of that heat. So it kills most seeds that would sprout. You know, you get a couple sprouts here and there of oats or wheat or something out of a bale. You could wipe those with vinegar on the end of a sponge mop, or you go out there and take your scissors and cut all those sprouts off into a cake pan. And you just take that pan of oat sprouts or wheat sprouts in the house and you put it in your blender and you make yourself a wheatgrass smoothie. That's a $15 smoothie right there.
Oh, man. And let's see, did we get – oh, Rick's problem could be with his that he uses a twine that breaks down over time.
You know, usually you get by a season, especially if the sisal's not touching the ground. You know, usually you can get through a season. But, you know, I just keep a pack of nylon twine around. If one breaks, you can wrap a piece of nylon twine around it. Big thing is you want to get that off before it goes in the compost at the end of the process. You know, get that nylon twine off. Sometimes I end up pulling the sisal twine off, too, and just throwing that in the garbage because it takes a lot longer for that to compost than a typical straw bale will. But, yeah, sisal twine is fine. You know, it's getting the bale to the backyard without breaking a string. Everybody knows you're carrying a bale across the yard, and if one of the strings breaks, it's like Humpty Dumpty, right? You're never going to put that thing back together again. It just explodes everywhere.
Oh, man. Rick, does that help out?
Yeah, it sure does, Larry. The other question is how does Joel feel about alfalfa in any of these bales? Sometimes you'll get a field with 20% or so alfalfa. Is that a pretty good organic source for him?
Absolutely. Yeah, a lot of nitrogen in that. You know, a lot of protein. You talk to a dairy farmer, and when they say, hey, that's what they mean, is alfalfa. You talk to a horse farmer, and you say, hey, to them, they mean grass, you know, typically. So, yeah, 20% alfalfa, even pure alfalfa bales. I've seen beautiful gardens growing out of that down in parts of the south where they don't have cereal grains anywhere, but they got hay everywhere. They'll use hay bales down there, and it works great.
Rick, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Joel Karsten, our guest today, founder of Straw Bale Gardening, and I'm Larry Mueller, and you are listening to Garden Talk right here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today. Talking straw bale gardening with Joel Karsten. And I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments. Open lines get you on pretty quickly. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. And I'd be interested in not only those who have, if you haven't grown before through straw bales, I hope you'll call in, but also if you are using straw bales, love to have you call in with your experiences about what's been good, have there been problems. What have you had really good success with? Those are all good things to talk about here on the show today. Again, the number is 800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address, ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. And Joel, somebody, you mentioned the cup and a quarter of nitrogen fertilizer over the time, the 10, 12 days of getting the bale ready or the bales ready. Somebody wondered, how much of that do you use? Like, do you use a little every day, or what do you do?
Yeah, I use a half a cup on days 1, 3, and 5. You're going to water every day during the 10 days. You're going to put a gallon of water on every day. First day, I want you to really soak the bales good. Take your hose out there, really soak it down. And then take your water hose and fill up a pail with water, because you're going to use that tomorrow. That way the water will have warmed up to air temperature at least. You know, this time of year, man, the water coming out of your hose is really cold. So it's better if we can get it to just warmed up to air temperature. That's best. So then the first day, it's going to be a half a cup. The third day, half a cup. And the fifth day, half a cup. And then the sixth day, we don't do any fertilizer. But the days 7, 8, and 9, we use half that amount, a quarter of a cup each day. And you're going to see by day 7, 8, 9, that bale is going to really be cooking. And that bacteria are really going to town inside that bale. And then you'll stick your hand down in there, and you almost can't keep your hand in the bale. It'll get nice and hot. Now, if your bales aren't getting hot, it might be that it's too cold. You know, you're outside in your parka, and it's 30 degrees outside. Well, you're not going to grow bacteria in 30 degrees. You know, think about your refrigerator in the house, Larry. It's 34, 35 degrees. And the whole reason we have a refrigerator is to stop bacteria from growing on our food. So if it's below the temperature of your refrigerator outside, then don't go out there that day. You can skip that day in the 12-day process, because all we need is one day when it's nice and warm. And if you target to start the conditioning process on your bales, target the day that's 20 days prior to your zip code, your location's average last frost date. So if your average last frost date would be May 15th, then you'd want to start that last week in April, 20 days before. All right. Yeah, last week, like the 25th, 6th, something like that,
yeah,
of April. And by the time that bale's conditioned 12 days later, you're going to be able to plant. Doesn't mean you have to plant on day 12, but you'd be able to plant a couple days before your average last frost date. And you say, oh, my goodness, I'm not going to plant before the last frost. What happened? You know what? Those bales are so nice and warm that even if it gets cold at night, especially if you keep a little plastic or some row cover cloth you can throw over the top, those bales are radiating heat and energy. So it'll protect your plants. You don't need to worry about them frosting. They're up off the ground, and there's a little heater running underneath them. So your plants aren't going to die from frost at that point. And then if you target that date 20 days before your average last frost, you're almost guaranteed to get a few days in there where it's 65, 70, 75 degrees. It happens, you know, year in, year out. You're going to get a few days during that time where it's really warm. And it can be cool but sunny as well. And if the sun beats down on that bale, you'd be surprised how that'll help heat that bale up, just the radiant energy from the sun. A little trick, if your bales aren't getting real hot, take some black plastic garbage bags, and you don't even have to cut them or tear them or anything. Just lay them on top of the bales and then tuck the sides under the strings on the sides of the bale, and that sun radiating down on that black plastic, that'll heat those bales right up. And that just helps kickstart the bacteria. Once those bacteria get going, Then you could take the plastic bags off and use them, you know, put them back in the closet, use them later. But it'll kickstart that heating process inside your bales.
Dennis in Afton, Minnesota. We'll go to you now. Thanks for calling, Dennis.
Oh, you bet. Yeah, thanks, everybody. Really appreciate it. I've got a couple bales that went through the winter, and you kind of indicated maybe tomatoes wouldn't be the best for that. They might want to use them for potatoes instead. But I'm wondering, could I still use them for tomatoes? And
yeah.
If not, would I spread out the bales, open them up, and if I wanted to plant potatoes?
Nope. Dennis, if you're going to use them, you certainly can use them for tomatoes. What you're going to have happen, even though those have sat out over the winter, they're not conditioned yet. You know, they might be wet and soggy, but they don't have an explosion of bacteria inside of them yet. So when you add that nitrogen fertilizer, you're going to see those bales will still get nice and toasty warm. Now, they might be a little bit along that process. I mean, you know, if you left a bale sit outside for a year, it's going to compost on its own. You know, you're not going to have to do anything to it. But just over the winter, especially because it's cold, there's not a lot of bacteria growing in the winter, you're going to be really surprised. That's going to act almost like a brand new bale fresh out of the barn when you put it out in your garden. So you certainly can grow tomatoes in that. Now, if you're going to do potatoes in a second year bale, we don't open the bale at all. All we do is make a hole in the bale. We take a piece of pipe or a piece of wood, 2x2 or something. We make a hole, punch a hole almost out the bottom of the bale. So you're about 3 inches from going out the bottom of the bale, and you drop your potato cutting down in that hole, and then you just walk away. And it'll sprout, and it'll send a stem right up through the hole that you made in that bale. So don't fill that in with anything. Let the stem come out. When the stem gets to the top of the bale, now you got a good 13, 14 inch long stem coming out of that bale. Remember, potatoes are chits, so they grow off the sides of the stem. They're not roots. So your root's going to go down in the bottom of the bale, might even go into the soil below the bale. But your potatoes are all going to form inside the bale along that stem that comes out. So now harvest time is just easy as pie. You go out there, you cut the two strings on the bale, and you kick the bale over, and you got, you know, two potato plants growing out of that bale. You know, you get 3/4 of a bushel of potatoes out of each bale. And they're nice, clean. You know, don't wash them. Don't wash them off. That's a trick my grandma taught me years ago. You don't wash your potatoes. You let them dry out. And then rub them a little bit to get the dirt chunks off if you're going in a soil garden. But here, they'll be nice and clean. So just let them dry out. And that'll, you know, help protect them. And then we always wrapped them. When I was a kid, we always wrapped them in newspaper and put them in storage. And, man, we had potatoes until the next June, until we had potatoes growing again in the garden. So,
yeah, there you go, Dennis. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it. Ben, who's near Viroqua, your turn. Hi, Ben.
Hey, Ben. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I've got some old hay, some alfalfa. I've got some empty raised beds, and I've got dairy goats. So I've got lots of manure. I had kind of a hybrid idea.
You got a recipe for a garden right there. The only thing I would caution you against is using the manure, and here's why. Because unless the manure has at least 5% nitrogen, it's going to be really hard to get enough manure into the bale in order to offset the amount of carbon that's in that bale. So, you know, I would, unless chicken manure will work, but it has to be pure chicken manure, composted. You know, you can't have straw and wood shavings and stuff in with it because you just don't get enough concentration of nitrogen. You certainly could add that as, you know, if you got a compost pile and you have had goat manure and it's composted in that compost for, you know, at least 10 to 12 weeks. So you make sure there's no disease, any E. coli or anything like that. If you pick a handful of it up, if it still smells like manure, it's not composted enough is usually the rule of thumb. So you want to make sure it smells like earth at that point. And then you could use that as sort of a top dressing around the plants. And there's going to be some nutrients there that'll go down in and help feed your plants for sure. But I wouldn't rely on that as a conditioning source. It's just not enough nitrogen to offset that carbon. You know, it's just a basic biology rule. Bacteria grows in a carbon-nitrogen ratio of about 20:23:1. And your oat straw is going to come off the field 45:1. And your wheat straw is going to come off the field at 80:1. So it needs a lot of nitrogen to offset that carbon to bring it in balance so that the bacteria will thrive inside that media. You know, you think about a compost pile. If you read anything about composting, they always talk about browns and greens. You got to get the right mix of browns and greens. Well, that's really carbon nitrogen. And if you don't have the right balance, it won't create an environment that's really conducive to bacteria growth. And bacteria is the decomposer. You know, you got some worms, you got some insects, you got, you know, fungi, and you got mold that'll grow. Those are all decomposers as well. But bacteria is the ultimate decomposer. It's what turns every living molecule on planet Earth, turns it back into soil at some point, and starts the whole process over again. So if I were you, I'd use the beds, and I'd use the old hay bales, but I'd get myself a bag of fertilizer to get it started, and then you could top dress with compost from your goats.
Ben, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Let's go to Julie in Sullivan next. Hi, Julie.
Hi. Okay. Yes, I have been doing the straw bales probably for 7 or 8 years, and the only thing I planted them was sweet potatoes, which comes as a plant from a store, okay?
Okay.
And that they don't come out until probably close to the end of May, I guess, because they take a warm temperature.
Yep.
But I bought the bales from the same farmer for the last number of years, and the last 2 years I've had a complete failure. There's absolutely nothing inside the bales. So, I am wondering.
Yeah, it could be just a lack of conditioning, as you know, could be. What are you putting on it for conditioning?
Well, I did use Milorganite probably every year, except maybe the last 2 years, so that might have been an issue.
Yeah.
We just bought some regular kind of fertilizer from, you know, a big box store with all the numbers on it, and condition them as properly. I even have your complete straw bale gardening book, and I followed everything directly, but
okay.
I don't understand why nothing actually happened. By the time we took the bales apart, there was just absolutely nothing in there, and the plants were just sort of hanging around on the surface, but not really. They were growing and covering everything. After a while, you can't see the bale at all. But
I
don't know if it was a plant or if it was some chemicals in the straw itself.
Yeah, I doubt that. Yeah. Yeah, it could just be, I think it probably was a conditioning issue, and that could have come. You can look on the back of your bag of fertilizer that you bought. Make sure it doesn't have a high percentage of what we call slow release nitrogen. You know, your expensive lawn fertilizers, like you buy a, you know, name brand lawn fertilizer, one of these that has four bags in a series or whatever, you buy those expensive lawn fertilizers and you look on the back and they all have a high percentage of what's called slow release nitrogen. And that means it's gonna divvy the nitrogen out over the full season. And so we don't get that burst of nitrogen, which means we don't get the microbial activity that really does the decomposition inside the bale. I think that's probably the explanation for what happened. You know, look on the back of the bag. They always have a little fertilizer. It's a little box on the back, and it explains what's in it, and look for the contents, the percentage of soluble nitrogen. And you know, if it's up above 50% not soluble, then it's probably not the best stuff. You want to buy the cheap stuff.
Yeah, you want the cheapest nitrogen,
the cheapest lawn fertilizer you can find.
Yeah, and high on nitrogen, and in fact all nitrogen if you can get it.
Yeah, if you can get pure nitrogen, that's even better. Ammonium nitrate, you know. Another big thing, Julie, could be your starts, you know, the sweet potato starts. I would really encourage you to try making some of your own starts. Buy a sweet potato that you like, put a couple toothpicks, put half of it in a glass of water and let half of it stick above, and then wait for them to sprout. And when those little sprouts come out, take a little tiny melon baller and take a chunk of potato out right below where the sprout came out, and then you put that in a separate glass of water by itself and let that root. And then you take it and transfer it right from a little rooted sprout, right from that glass of water, or that pan of water or whatever, right into your bale. And you'll see you get even better luck. The ones that are started in those little six packs, they kind of are root bound very often, and they just don't perform as well. And you'll see you'll get a lot deeper roots and a better sweet potato production by using your own starts. And it's super cheap to do. You know, you get 20, 30 of them off of one potato. So, you know, you can make a whole bunch of them off of one sweet potato.
Yeah. Julie, does that help?
Idea, because I I don't particularly like what I can find in the store, but I definitely prefer some of the sweet potatoes that are a different variety.
Yeah, well, I agree with you.
Yeah. Well, good luck. Give it a try and see what happens.
Yeah, reach out on our website if you have more questions. I'm always here for you. I always try to answer questions as quick and thoroughly as I can. There's probably already been conversations about sweet potatoes on the website, and we have a searchable forum. So you can just put in a couple of keywords and find any past discussions we've had about that topic and give you more detail, maybe some pictures and stuff like that to go by as well.
And that site was strawbalegardenclub.com.
Yep.
Straw Bale Garden
Club. It says club, but it's not a private club. Anybody can come on in and join us.
Okay. Joel Karsten, our guest. Joel, founder of Straw Bale Gardening, the author of a number of books on the topic. You can find out a lot more at the site, strawbalegarden.com. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about straw bale gardening today on the show. Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along with us today on the Ideas Network. Our guest is Joel Karsten. He is the founder of Straw Bale Gardening. He's traveled really across the world to help grow vegetables in areas that don't have that option and has written a number of best-selling books on the topic. So as we talk with Joel, I hope you'll join in with your questions and your experiences as well. If you've been a straw bale gardener, I hope you'll tell us how things have been going for you and what you've been growing in your straw bales. If you haven't done it before, you probably have some questions about it, and I hope you'll join in as well. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you can email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Joel, we had Steve from Minocqua call with a question. Can you grow hops using a straw bale? And if so, what does that process look like?
I don't know. That's a really good question. I mean, I would assume it would grow just fine. I don't think hops takes any particular special media. I know you got to have a big, you know, they got to climb up something, so you'd have to have some big wire support above it, but I don't see why you couldn't. You know, there's a few crops I tell people that don't really love straw bales. Corn, you know, you can grow corn, sweet corn, but you're only going to get about 3 stalks of corn out of a bale, so it's not very economical, and they tend to have really big roots. They tip over easily. The other things I don't recommend are perennial-type things like rhubarb and asparagus, because it takes 3 years just to get the roots established, and by that time, you have nothing left of your bale in your garden except a little lump of soil, you know, a lump of compost. That's all that remains after 3 years, and then all your asparagus and rhubarb would be growing up on top of a hump, and we don't want that. You know, it'll be hard to water, so... the other thing that hasn't done terrific for me is onions, but I get reports from people in the southern part of the United States that love it. They love their onions, so in the bales. So rosemary doesn't do very well. It's the only one of the herbs that doesn't seem to love it. Other than that, I mean, you'll have the best tomatoes, cucumbers, peppers, eggplant. You know, the whole squash family just loves straw bales.
Oh, yeah.
As does greens, lettuce, and kale, and all that kind of stuff. Loves straw bales as well.
Let's go to Liz in Dane County. Liz, hi.
Hey, Liz.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Appreciate the call.
Thank you so much for putting this show on, Larry, and Joel for providing all of us with this information. I have several friends who have done straw bale gardening, and they love it. I have black walnuts. Is that going to cause me any problems? or is it considered a raised garden type of thing?
Yeah, you know, the great thing about straw bale gardening is I get a lot of people who use it specifically because they have black walnuts and they have trouble growing a garden. You know, if you build a permanent raised bed, a lot of times the roots of the tree will get up in that raised bed as well. And the juglans, that poison that they put in the soil, will spread into the raised beds as well. You know, it takes a few years, but that can happen in raised beds. Where with the straw bales, we're replacing them every 2 years, so that tree's not going to have time to get any roots growing up inside there. And most of your roots of the plants in the bales are not going to get down. If they get into the soil, it's only going to be in the top few inches. And usually got to be, you know, 4, 6, 8 inches deep before that juglans really starts to cause a problem with your plants. But it's a great solution. You know, the big thing is to stay away from the shade. You know, you want to get on the sunny side of those black walnuts. But certainly could have a garden right around the base of them. No one heard a thing.
Yeah, and then I guess the only other thing, the juglan is present throughout the tree. So, you know, you don't want to get a bunch of leaves from the black walnut laying on your top of your straw bale.
Yeah, right.
So that'd be the only other thing, and that probably isn't very likely to happen anyway. So there you go, Liz. Thank you so much for calling. It's a good solution for people with black walnuts. Jim in Kenosha, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hey, how are we doing? I got a comment, and then I have a question because I just moved to Kenosha from across the border in Lake County. And my comment is about my sister in unincorporated Antioch. About 5 years ago, she started straw bale gardening. And you want to talk about neighbors thinking she might have gone crazy because nobody had ever seen or heard of it. And, like, she's watering these bales in her front yard. And then all of a sudden, there's an explosion of those vegetables and just absolutely beautiful and green. So, you know, the joke was on them. And then the next thing you know, some people are considering it. So she's since moved to Simi Valley, California, and besides the tropical garden, she has the straw bales for vegetables. But anyways, I just moved to Kenosha, and I have a very wooded lot, and the most sun's going to be in my front yard. It's, you know, so, but my question is, when you don't have a lot of sun, what's the best thing to grow in those bales? And I can take it off air, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, you know, the good rule of thumb for vegetables is the bigger the leaf, the less sun that vegetable is going to require. Now, all of them are going to require 4 hours of sun. Almost every vegetable you're going to grow, even big leaves like cabbage and things like that, you're going to need at least 4 hours. So if you don't have at least a good solid 3.5-4 hours of sun, yeah, you might not have great success with vegetables. But the smaller the leaf, the more sun it needs. So if you get anything with a leaf the size of your thumb or smaller, tomatoes and potatoes and things like that, you got to really have a full day of sun. You know, 6, 7, 8 hours of good sun is best for a vegetable garden. So, you know, you might try some of the lettuces, things like that, that have a bigger leaf and, you know, not a super high value crop, but you might try things like basil and, you know, a few other things.
If you're a mushroom fan.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you could grow mushrooms for sure in that shady area. That certainly would work.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, I tell people the first thing you need to buy is a good sharp chainsaw. And that makes some space so you can garden and have a good garden. But, no, I appreciate trees, too. I mean, I have a degree in horticulture, so I appreciate people have big established trees. You're not going to certainly do that to have a garden. But if you can squeak any sunlight for 4 hours, you know, even if you got to really be out in a public area, you know, you could put little – people worry about what the bales look like. You can plant flowers in the sides of the bales. You know, dress it up real nice, make it look pretty, put some impatiens or petunias or something around the base of it. Or you can buy these little plastic picket fence pieces. As a matter of fact, our favorite store, Menards, carries these. You just shove them in the ground. They got two little points on them. You shove them in the ground, and you can put these little picket fences around your bales. It looks like a raised bed, like you spent all kinds of time building a beautiful raised bed garden, and all it is these little plastic picket fences you can put in right around the bales. So it works pretty slick.
You've got some photos on your site, too, that I like the one of by the garage.
Yeah, that arch garden. Yeah, growing right. That I grew that in the driveway, and I could still pull my truck in and out of the garage, Larry. But yet that trellis went way up over the top of where the car went in and out and growing right on asphalt. You know, I got an asphalt driveway, so I put three bales on each side and put these big arched cattle panels up over the top. And there was squash growing up over there, and I'd pull in and out. You got to be real careful when you pull in and out so you don't bump the squash as you're going in and out.
Rosemary from Fountain City had a question. She wants to know if straw bales will attract mice.
Oh, it's a common question I get, and it's a bit of a misnomer. You know, if it was a nice, dry bale of straw, it probably would, because if you're a mouse looking for a house, a nice dry bale of straw is the place to go. But if you show up and the sheets are soggy everywhere you go, you know, you're certainly going to move out of that hotel in a hurry. So as soon as that bale gets wet and you're going to keep it wet throughout the growing season, it's not going to be an issue. You know, the number one reason people have a mouse in their garden is because they have a bird feeder right by their garden. And people will call me, they'll say, I got a mouse in my garden, I don't know what to do. I'll tell them, well, first thing you got to do is take down your bird feeder. They'll say, how did you know I had a bird feeder? Because every time you have a bird feeder right by your vegetable garden, you end up with rodents. You know, mice, squirrels, everything else goes after that bird feeder. And, you know, then while they're there, they'll take a bite out of your tomato plant. So, be cautious about that. You know, when it gets super hot during the summer, a lot of times you'll have squirrels that'll come up and they'll bite a hole in your tomatoes. And it would be one thing if they just ate the whole tomato, but they never do that. They just take one bite out of it. And what they're really doing is they're thirsty and they're too lazy to go find water somewhere else. So they bite a hole in your bottom of your tomato and they drink the juice that drips out of it until they're not thirsty anymore. And then your tomato sits up there and hangs on the plant and rots. So if you just put a bird bath somewhere in your garden, then the bird bath will keep the squirrels watered, and you won't have to worry about them eating your tomatoes.
Anne from Nina says her straw bale gardening is wonderful and a great way to hold water, but she did have a problem with chipmunks digging up her plants. She put up a fence, and they would still crawl up it. She found success from using hardware cloth, on the top of the bale and stapled it so that way they couldn't dig around in there and get in. Have you ever had that problem?
No, I can't say I ever have. I've heard of people having moles or voles that'll come up through the bottom of the bale, but that hardware cloth works great just unrolled on the ground, and you put the bales on top of it, and that prevents any moles or voles from coming up from below. But I've never heard of a chipmunk digging it up. You must have a desperate chipmunk. Or it could also be that maybe she used fish emulsion.
Oh.
And that chipmunk was smelling that fish emulsion or something in the fertilizer, you know, that it was going after. Because I've heard of that before, where like a raccoon will come and dig into the bale because somebody put fish emulsion, you know, which is a common organic fertilizer, and that will attract something looking for fish. You know, they smell that fish smell. So that is a possibility. But other than that, I can't think of, you know, I've heard of rabbits jumping up on top of the bales. Usually the rabbits are pretty, it takes them a while to get onto the fact that there's a garden up there, you know, before they'll jump up there. And then what I tell people, if you get a rabbit in your neighborhood that starts jumping up on the bales, just take a box of plastic forks and you stick the handles down in the bale. And then you put them up there for a couple of weeks, and that rabbit jumps up there a few times and gets poked in the bottom. And then after a couple of weeks, they get trained not to do that anymore. And then you go out, pick your forks up, put them back in the box, and you use them again next year.
There you go. What are some key things to remember as you grow, as you go through the season, Joel?
Well, the number one thing, and I mentioned this earlier, but I'll talk about it again, is try not to overwater the garden.
Yeah.
The number one thing that we deal with is, you know, during the conditioning period early on, if you put too much water on, you'll displace the oxygen in the bale, and then you'll have a sewer smell because it's anaerobic bacteria that will grow in there. What we want are aerobic bacteria, and it'll be a nice sweet soil smell, but it won't smell like sewer. So if you overwater, you'll get that, and it slows down the decomposition process when that happens. So don't use too much water, 1 gallon per day during conditioning. And then during the season, when your plants get bigger, you might need to water more frequently, but every time you water, try to put 1 gallon of water on the bale. It doesn't take very long. You know, most of the time your spigot's going to give you 2 gallons a minute. So if you've got 10 bales, you only need to be watering. If you're using a wand out there, you only need to be watering for 5 minutes. And then every bale's got a gallon of water. You know, 2 gallons a minute, 5 minutes, it's 10 gallons, 1 gallon per bale. That's all we're shooting for. If you're using a soaker or a dripper system, it might take a little longer because not all of the flow is going out as fast as it would be if you're using a sprayer, you know, on your hose. But you got to figure it out so that there's not more than a gallon going on that bale every time you water. And that will really change what happens in your straw bale garden. Your nutrients will stay intact. You don't even have to fertilize throughout the summer. You know, it holds all those micronutrients in as the straw breaks down and provides calcium and other things that are more soluble. If you're watering too much, you're going to wash that all out of the bale. So be really cautious about not watering too much. Increase the frequency if you need to. And a great way to do that is a little hose end timer. You know, they make these little timers you put on the end of your garden hose and you program it like your alarm clock. So it wakes up at 4 o'clock in the morning and it waters for 10 minutes. And if it's really hot that time of year, it might water again at 10 o'clock. It might water again in the afternoon at 2 o'clock. But each time, it's only watering for 2, 3, 4 minutes. And that even dispensing of water is going to give you much better results from your vegetables.
Yeah, all good tips. You know, whenever we talk about this method, the straw bale method, we get calls from people, and today's no exception either, who are having a hard time finding straw. Finding bales and how do you find bales? And if you can't find bales, what else can you do?
Yeah, well, you know, you'd be surprised when you become a straw bale gardener like you and I are, how often you'll see bales, you know, because you start looking for them. If you just talk to somebody who's never thought about buying a bale of straw, sometimes it's hard for them to figure out where to buy it. But you'd be surprised how many places you'll find them for sale once you become a gardener and you start looking for them. So that's one thing is, you know, look around. I know Facebook Marketplace, a lot of farmers will put ads on there or Craigslist or in the local newspaper or the, you know, the free papers that they hand out. They'll have straw bales for sale. But number two, find a farmer. It doesn't even have to be a farmer with bales. But if you just talk to a farmer, they're going to know all the other farmers around and they're going to know who grows wheat, who grows oats, and who's got straw bales more than likely. So that's a good way, is to find somebody who's already a farmer, and they'll steer you in the right direction. You'd be surprised you stop the local farmer's co-op with a box of donuts. You'd be surprised how much information you can get out of those guys. They'll tell you exactly who's growing what where and who's got bales and who doesn't and, you know, what the guy's name is, and they'll even give out his phone number. So that's a good place to go. And if worst-case scenario, you absolutely can't find bales, you can make your own bales. And we show people in a video on the website exactly how to do this. That's a little monkey business, but basically you take a great big giant plastic tub like you store your Christmas decorations in. You just dump out all your decorations. You bring this big plastic tub outside, and then you fill that up with grass clippings and leaves, and, you know, your Valentine's Day flowers go in there. They're dead, and everything that can decompose, kind of like you would do in a compost pile. If you got some leftover straw from last year, that could go in there. And then you get up on top, you jump it down, stomp it down really good. You wet it down, you know, take your hose and really soak it good. Let it sit overnight. And then you dump that container out the next day and you'll have a brick, a solid brick of organic matter. Now you need to wrap around that with chicken wire. Very cheap. It's 30 cents worth of chicken wire to go around that cube, that brick that you've made. And now you staple both the loose ends onto a wooden stake with a sharp end on the bottom, and then you twist the stake until it's really nice and tight around there, and you pound the sharp end of the stake in the ground, and there you have a bale. It didn't cost you anything. You'd be surprised. Your neighbors will give you their leaves, and you collect grass clippings when you mow your lawn. You can throw those in there. You'd be surprised how much organic matter you can accumulate. You know, if you're trimming your trees, you get some little trimmings off the ends of the branches. Those could go in there. Basically, anything that'll decompose can go in there. Stay away from, you know, meats and cheeses and things like that, but any vegetable peelings can go in there. You know, anything that will decompose quickly like that.
And, you know, in the spring and in the city, you're going to, up and down my street, there's everybody piles their leaves and their refuse and so forth from the year before for the city to come around and pick up. Well, you can take your wheelbarrow and go ahead and get some of that from the neighbors. And you can fill one of those tubs pretty darn quick if you're in the city. And of course, one tub there, you can make. How many straw bales do you use
I had 36 bales delivered at about 5:30 this morning, Larry, believe it or not. So, and that's not counting my second year bales that I'll use. And then I do another garden over at the state fairgrounds, which is 24 bales. So yeah, I have a lot of straw bale gardening happening in the summer.
Oh man. And there are a number of cities here in the U.S. that are using straw bale gardening as well. If I'm not mistaken. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, a lot of community gardens switching over to straw bale gardening. You know, when you run a community garden, it's easy to find volunteers on planting day, but it's really tough to find volunteers on weeding day. So they like the straw bales because there's no weeds. You know, they don't have to spend time weeding the garden. So a lot of those have switched over. I was just in Washington, D.C. I did a home and garden show there in Washington, D.C. as a keynote speaker, and they I partnered with a nonprofit organization called Food for Others. And they have two community gardens right in D.C., kind of in the urban areas of D.C. And they get a lot of people that are, you know, economically challenged that come to these community gardens, learn how to grow stuff, and then go home and they emulate what they've learned at the community garden. I think that's really important. You know, if you don't have any space, you live in an apartment, maybe a community garden is your permanent solution. But for many people, it's a great place to go and learn. You know, it's like getting a horticulture class, going to the community garden, learning from these other gardeners that have been doing it forever. And so this Food for Others is going to set up two demonstration gardens that show how you do straw bale gardening. So we're really excited about that. But a lot of little projects like that in cities all around, all across the country. I have over 100 certified straw bale gardening instructors now all around the United States. And they go out, work with, you know, the fair or the county or whatever, and they set up examples. A lot of libraries now are setting up gardens, straw bale gardens, so that their patrons can see how the process works and see how simple it is. And how inexpensive it is to get started with a straw bale garden. You know, if, like we just talked about making your own bales. If you make your own bales, you can do this for almost nothing. I mean, it's very inexpensive to get started.
It's it really is. Carrie from Duluth, her straw bales, she used it in a pumpkin display last fall. And all the exposed sides of her straw bales were sprouting what she assumed was wheatgrass. She took them for her compost pile, but they're still in bales waiting to be composed. Do you have any potential for use in planting? And we only have about 30 seconds left here.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Yeah, she can plant right in those. The sprouts are done. You know, once they sprout, knock those sprouts off, and they'll be perfect to plant. So tell her to go ahead and plant right in them. I'm going to be up in Duluth at the Arrowhead Home and Garden Show or Home and Builder Show next week. So tell her to come and visit me. I'd be love to chat with her about it.
Joel, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. I really appreciate your time on this. And I'm sure a lot of people are going to go to your website, strawbalegardenclub.com.
Thanks for having me on, Larry. I really appreciate it. It's great to talk to you again this spring.
We'll do it again. Thank you. Joel Karsten. And again, his site is strawbalegardenclub.com. You don't have to pay to be a member, but you do need to sign up. Just join in, and then you can take advantage of everything in there. And there's a lot there, believe me. Well, it's fun doing the show with Joel. Monday, we'll have a fun show, too. We'll look at fusion energy and where technology stands on that. And then a talk with our weather guys. Must be the last Monday of the month. Join in from 11 to 12:30 right here on the Ideas Network. Stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mueller.